Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Well, welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Co-host today is Miss Jennifer Ann Gordon.
Hi, Alan.
Well, how you doing? Hey, you know what? I guess what I saw. I saw this on the internet, and I thought this is a great, great object for Halloween. And it's a Christmas sweater, and it's got a picture of Jeffrey Dahmer on it.
I love it already.
Do you have it already?
No, but
And you know what the wording on it is? I eat guys like you for dinner. I thought this would be great. I could wear that, and I don't like wearing sweaters, but
I don't like wearing Christmas sweaters. But I do have one that has a T-Rex on it. But I feel like Jeffrey Dahmer might be more my vibe.
Exactly, and he's really looking crazy. He's got like black eyes in it. He looks like he's had a rough day, or maybe a good day for him. Depends.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
potato.
I've seen all the movies and TV shows.
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. You do know that. I don't know if you know this, but one of my co-hosts on this show, Steve David Lampley, was on for about 4 or 5 years, and he went on to Nancy Grace's show and is still on her show. But do you know he was a roommate, or not roommate, but a classmate of Dahmer?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Did you ever read the book or see the movie My Friend Dahmer?
I've seen them all.
Yeah,
it was based on a graphic novel, which was really interesting. And again, it was written by a high school classmate of his.
Yeah, I think that's great. Well, I mean, not for
the victims.
No, but for the classmate, he made some money. I mean,
exactly.
A little bit. Wow.
Yeah, because it's huge money in graphic novels.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I guess I had a boring childhood. I never went to school with anybody like that. I think I was the weirdest person in the class.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had me labeled up there too. That's it. Stay away.
Well, you know, that was life when I was young in Canada. I think I scared them. You know, they've never been the same since. So, well, let's see. Now we've got Edward Green, or known as E.A. Green on his book, and he's got The Blessed Flock out now. So let's talk about his book and everything. So welcome, Edward.
Hello, everybody out there in Radio Land. How y'all doing?
They're not going to answer, just so you
know. They're not going to answer. Wait, maybe in your head, you can hear.
Oh, that's the clowns. They talk to me.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, you know, we get emails, so I'll let you know what they say. But
oh, they're cool.
Well, yeah. So listen, you've been out for a little while, and now you've come out. Now this is the Blessed Flock. Let's tell us a little bit about this. What is the Blessed Flock, and kind of maybe the basic idea behind the book?
The basic idea of the book is it's back during, let's say, the late 1800s, mid to late, and a group of Protestants from the East Coast, their leader at that time has this prophecy that God spoke to them and they need to head out west. And when they head out west, they end up finally finding an area that was prophesied about. It was a certain piece of land next to a river covered in apple trees. And it matched the prophecy exactly, but there was a group of Native Americans living there. And so what the founding fathers did was they slaughtered the Native Americans in the name of God, because God told them to go do it. Well, in the long run, they end up getting cursed. So you're going to find out about this entire town from founding until its end of what they do and all the crazy preachers that come along. And the town is literally, it's just ate up with sin, between sin and greed and lust. It's pretty extreme book. I made sure to give it a warning label because I really don't know if kids 18 and under should be reading it. But, I started reading nasty things like that when I was about 13. So, you know, nowadays you never know.
Well, you know, if they're on TikTok, they probably
have seen it.
Yeah, they've seen all sorts of stuff. But what's this? You got Pastor Tucker. He's your kind of like your main guy there.
Yes,
right?
He's the founder. Yeah. And he's the prophet preacher that takes them there. And after they do the bad deed, he ends up, in a sense, kind of getting a revelation that they were not supposed to kill these people. They were supposed to learn from them. Well, he goes crazy, like most prophets in the Old Testament did. They went crazy. And so he ends up.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Slaughtering all the fathers. And so at that point, his family, his wife and his daughter at the time, were told to leave, never come back. Well, so the book kind of picks up in the future to where her family, her like grandmother, great grandmother and all that, she's the last daughter of this family. And she's been told her whole life the town's gone, it doesn't exist. And she finds out it does. And so after her mother dies and her grandmother dies, she decides, you know what, they might kill me, but I'm going back, because she's never had a father. And so she considers Jonathan Tucker not just her father, but he was the prophet. And so she's the prophet's daughter. So she thinks a little more of herself than she should have. And so she heads back. And then, so what you're going to find out is what they did. And then what's going on in the town, because they literally will kill each other. They're just that they go crazy, because every year at a certain time, the cicadas come back. And this town is built in a valley that it acts like a tuning fork in all the trees and the people. And so every 12 years, the cicadas come back, and it basically, the sound is so loud down in that valley, it causes them to go crazy. And so this happens about every 12 years, they go crazy, and whatever survivors are left continue on. And so this is the curse that follows them. And in the future, when the gal Norbeth Tucker, or Tolliver, Norbeth Tolliver is her name, she's Tucker's great-great-granddaughter. And so she decides to go back to the town, and she's there. She arrives after most of the town has already been suffering through this cicada plague. And so you get to see what happens to her. It has a supernatural vibe to it, because when Jonathan ends up, when they kill the Indians, the tribe there, he thinks that, you know, they're all dead, and he comes across a little girl, and when he tries to kill her, she ends up turning into an eagle. And so he's all freaked out. Did he grab an eagle in the fog, Misty, in the misty fog, or did he grab a girl? He's not sure now. And so that takes place where he gets hurt. And so there's this mysticism, in a sense, a supernatural vibe, because near the end of the book, then you're going to find out that a gal who runs the bed and breakfast, her name's Abenaki is her name, and she's from that tribe. And she ends up moving back to that town. So there's a supernatural vibe between the cicadas and her, and Nora's coming back to the town. And so it's pretty extreme book. Intense, taboo subject matters. It's got adult language, sexual situations, because they literally have just basically delved into sin. They're just ate up with it.
I remember back in the day, so I've known Ed for a few years now. I remember you and I were talking about this book once before when it was in its original form, and you talked about how it was very taboo.
Yes.
And were you nervous writing such dark material? Were you wondering, Will the audience find it? Will they, what will they think of me as a person? I know sometimes I think as authors, we sometimes get a little scared to go that far in that dark. Were you scared to do that? Did you find it liberating? Did the clowns that live in your house tell you to read, to write this?
Oh, the clowns tell me a lot of things. No, actually, I have a cousin and she goes by A.A. Dark and she writes the real dark erotica and all that stuff. And I actually asked her opinion, you know, when I write, is there any rules? And she basically told me that at this point, just write your book. And then when you send it in, if the editor or the publisher has a problem with it, then, you know, you'll deal with that if you have to change things or not. You know, that's all up in the air at that point. And so I just sat down and I wrote it. I just, you know, threw all caution to the wind. Now that I'm through with it, I get what you're saying, because my partner, he's all like, oh, what are they going to say? I'm scared they're going to react this way. And I'm thinking, you know, yeah, I'm going to rile some feathers. I'm probably going to rile a lot of feathers between the religious community and the fact that it can be quite vulgar in places with the language and stuff. But at this point, you know what? I don't care. I'm an artist. This is how they are. That's why I put it in the disclaimer. I did not write this book promoting what you're about to read. I do not agree with what the characters are doing in this book. I do not condone it. It is just a book. And so I know there's still going to be those that think, yeah, that's a bunch of bullshit.
Oh, my.
You know, just blowing hot air. But it, to me, it's just a book in a sense. I'm not writing it to promote anything other than my writing. And so, yeah, it was at first a little bit, but now I'm just like, you know, it's my book. You either can take it or leave it.
Yeah, and I think, would you consider this a horror novel? Because I think with horror, we can get away with a little bit more than most other writers can.
I do consider it horror because once you find out what happens in the town, it is a horror story of what she finds and runs across. Because at that point, most of the town's gone when she arrives. And so it does delve into horror really deep also. So it's got a little of everything in it.
You said Pastor Tucker's daughter. What was her name? Ivanka?
yeah, thank God, no. His wife is Mary, and they called his daughter Little Bit.
Oh, my gosh, that was my nickname as a kid.
Was it?
That's what my father called me.
Oh, boy, now we're finding out the truth behind the story here. What's going on?
So Little Bit is basically Nora's great-great-grandmother, and she was alive when her dad, Pastor Tucker, basically, they helped slaughter the tribe, and then he turns around and he slaughters the founding fathers because they won't repent like he feels they need to. And so he makes sure they repent.
Do they have rallies too? No. But how do you keep track of so many characters over so much time? And how do you experience these characters? Like, do you hear them in your head? How is the audio going? Is it kind of like watching a movie, or do you have a totally distant, you know, relationship with your characters?
I actually, first I make cheat notes. Because I know at times I might want to remember a birthday or a month or something they did or said. And so I actually make a little cheat note sheet I keep with me. And I'm going to say I am one of these blessed people. I can shut my eyes. I can step back and I can literally step into the scene. And to me, I'm looking at what they're seeing. I'm smelling what they're seeing. The wind's blowing in my head. I'm feeling it, and I'm feeling the emotions and how I should, what they're feeling. So, yeah, in a sense, my partner kind of gets mad at me because when I quit writing or when I come out of it, that I'm brain fried for sometimes at least an hour to the rest of the day, because it's like trying to come back from one reality into not a reality, but come back into reality. So, yeah, it's like I'm in two places at different times when I write. It's really, I don't know how else to explain it, except it's almost as if I'm there while I'm writing the scene.
Wow. So do you dress like your characters, too?
Well, yeah, kind of. I got all
so you're wearing a pastor's outfit during, during the writing, I guess.
No, we haven't gone to that point yet, but, you know, my other half can be kind of kinky, so you never know.
Well, there we go. Let's get into
that. Awesome. I'm like, these are the questions we should be asking.
Yeah, this is what we're getting into here.
Like, so are we doing Blessed Flock role play?
No, well,
no cicadas were harmed during the writing of this.
Were harmed, I promise.
Yeah, so you passed her outfit with black panties. I could see it now.
Fishnet stockings.
Oh, well, that now, see?
Yeah.
Now we got the truth.
Frankenfurter Rocky Horror vibe.
No, this has got to affect you emotionally. A big section like this, if you're into the other realities, you say, when you get into it and you're going through the story and you're writing it and you're feeling the emotions and you're, it's like you're there and you're actually the characters in a way, and you come out of it. When you look back at this, when you go through the experiences that your characters do, how does that change you, do you think, as a person or as a writer?
Well, I think that for one, it changes me to get me closer to these individual people. But I do know that what it does change is when I get done, sometimes I feel like I'm on a high and I've got to calm down. And it can take me a month before I even start my next book because those characters are still, their emotions are still flowing through my head. And it's if I, you know, I felt them. So it's like I get this really weird high that I just carry with me until the book's really done. Like I said, that high can last up to a month after because of all the emotions, the feelings. It's in my thoughts when I lay down to go to sleep. I've got my mind seeing scenes in my head. Could I have written it better? This was going on. And so it does have an effect on me.
We were talking before the show, and you were saying that so the Blessed Flock is, I mean, it's really an epic. It's a close to 1,000 pages of a story, of one story. So for me, I can hardly wrap my brain around how an author can do that, because I know I can't do that. Did you go into it knowing what was going to happen? Did you know the end? Did you outline it? Like, are you a pantser? Did this just come to you each night in your dreams, like telling your story?
My books just come to me. It's just in my head. I don't do formats. Usually what happens is I'll come up with an idea. I think that'd be a great story. And 9 times out of 10, I've already got the beginning, how I want to start it. And I already know an idea how I want it to end. It's like it just comes to me. Cicadas, when it was originally called Year of the Cicada, I carried just that title with me close to 10 years. Because I didn't know what kind of story to write. I had no clue. And I was just sitting on my porch one day, and the wind chimes were blowing with a storm coming in. And instantaneously, it popped in my head how to write it, how it was going to go. And it just came out of nowhere.
Just blew your fishnets right off.
You sure did.
So you didn't have a point to it when you were writing it. But as you went through it, do you have sort of a subtext or a meaning to this story that you want readers to get?
No, I mean, I'm not trying to push any kind of, you know.
Agenda.
Agenda, yeah. No, there's no agenda in it at all. The thing basically is it's just a really good story. And it is kind of cultish, pretty much. Well, it is like a cult. Because of what they do and how they hide the their past and how they were willing to follow. And they think way more of themselves than they should have because they're Protestants. So they're white Protestants. So, you know, there's nothing better and holier than a white Protestant, according to these people. And so it's just a lot of my stories. No, there's no agenda at all. It just comes to me. I don't lay it out. I just write. And as it comes to me, I keep on writing. Then once we're done, I just go back and edit and write some more before I do my usually third or final edit. And that involves my writing program. It actually reads it back to me. So at that point, I can see where I might have missed or thought, oh, something can go in here because that associates with it. Like when I first got the book back, it was almost 400 pages. And so by fixing it and adding and writing that was missing, it grew almost another 600 pages.
Do you have, you know, like a group of beta readers, or like who's the first person besides yourself to get their eyes on the book? Like, does your partner read it? Because sometimes, like, if I write something really weird, my husband's like, oh, I want to read it. And I'm like, oh, I don't really want you to be the first one to read it. I would rather, maybe it would be better if it was a stranger.
No, I wish I had some beta readers. My partner's not really a big reader. He's more of a visual. He loves movies and music, and that's his forte. But he is around when it reads it back to me, so he does get to hear it. And at times he's even telling me, dude, that's just messed up. You're not going to get in trouble? I'm like, well, either them or I'm not. So he's more of the worrywart for us when it comes to should I have said that or should I have wrote that. Or, you know, it doesn't bother me that much. But beta readers, I wish I had more opportunity for beta readers. But no, most of my books I write and I put on Amazon and or put them out there, and I give them away free at times for like a week. I give that free Kindle download for an entire week for each book. And even then, when I'm giving them away free, I still can't get hardly, but I think to date, I've only had like 3 or 4 people that have actually made comments about my books. But other than that, no, I'm really missing in that area.
Send it to some of the churches and see.
I've thought about that.
I think those are the bathrooms you should leave the book in. Bathrooms.
Yeah, go to the church bathrooms and leave it, you know. Maybe they'll burn them. How do you get your formulation on the cult, like you call them, or the kind of the religious group that you've got going on here? Do you do some research, or is this just from your own life? Did you come across some of people like this and that? Where does that come from?
It comes from two places. One, I was raised in the church my whole life, and I was faithful in the church all the way up to about 35 when I finally realized this is ridiculous, because I realized there's so many lies and misinterpretations, and it's been rewritten and changed. So I do have firsthand knowledge of what goes on behind those doors, of who's sleeping with who got divorced with who. Pastors that say, you know, you can't question me. Well, that's the leader. You know, you don't question the leader. And then the other thing is I love watching investigation shows and stuff about serial killers and cults. And I've always been into that too. And so I've got a lot of that about cults from what I've just experienced and what I've watched and what I've read.
Oh. Religious people don't sleep with each other. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go with that. That's easy to believe.
Yeah, I watched one year. It was musical chairs. It was a total of 6 people who flipped husbands, changed husbands and wives, remarried. And I was just like, wow, okay.
So do you actually have characters in this that were inspired by real people you know?
Maybe a little. I got my experiences in there. Now, the book I'm writing on working on right now, 70x7, is actually about 60-70% based on someone I know personally. So I do at times mix some of my life and my experiences in the things I've heard or, you know, been a part of or knew of. And so, yeah, there's a little bit of me in almost all my books.
And who is your kind of like, I don't want to say favorite character, what's the most memorable character in this series?
I got to say it's got to be Nora, her mother, Little Miss Bitch, and her grandmother, Adeline. Because while you're hearing about the town, this extended family of Jonathan Tucker's that's not there, they basically work the state fair rounds. And since they have actually brought with them when they were kicked out, she took some of the apple trees that grow in the town with her. And so his offspring actually are apple bakers, and they bake all kinds of dishes, and they compete at state fairs, and you get to see what all they're doing in their life and some of the things and what they do to win, what grandma and them are willing to pay whatever price it takes to get the win. And so you get to kind of see just how sexually deviant they can be. And so there's a lot going on in this book. It really is. You might have to read it a couple of times because I've got Easter eggs throughout the whole thing. And you'll realize down the road, oh, I didn't know that, or I didn't realize that. That's a good thing there, because there's a lot of secrets that I kind of let slip here and there, but if you're not paying attention, you'll miss them.
So basically, it's like a very dark, queer Peyton place with horror.
Yeah, with horror.
So I kind of wanted to ask about, so queer horror is having such a huge moment right now, especially kind of like extreme queer horror. Would you consider this book, your work in general, queer horror?
It's not, in a sense, I want to say queer horror, but the first individual killed in the town is a gay man.
Ugh, that's how it always goes.
Yep, he's slaughtered. He is literally slaughtered. And that's how it starts off, is the finding of his body. And it goes on from there, and you'll learn about him. So, yes, there is an actual partnership in it in the beginning. And so that is mixed in there also. I have that in a number of my books. I'm not afraid to kind of throw that in, whether it be in my crime dramas or like horror or any of that. So, yeah, it starts off right off the bat. It's like I'm already probably throwing punches that others are not going to probably like. But, you know, it's just a story. That's all it is.
It's just a story. No, I mean, I feel like as queer writers, because this is like my second time I've been on this show as a co-host, and I love it because last time we had a queer writer, this time we have a queer writer. I think it's just really important for us to like use our voices as queer authors and put representation for us in our work. It's kind of hard when we write really dark fiction to have it be like, yay, us! But, yay, sorry, they're probably going to die.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad to say, you know, I'm a gay author, I'm queer. Woohoo! But I haven't yet to write a book, let's just say, based on queer relationships and all that, but I do not mind at all mixing them in. And so who knows, I might write one someday where it's just all about that. But I do go there. And like I say, a lot of those in the community, there'll be a number that probably won't like the fact that I killed a gay man right off the bat. Because I think even Stephen King got in trouble for it, that he upset the community.
Yeah.
He killed the gay guy a little later on in the book.
Well, couldn't you have the gay guy identify as a straight man?
No, they purposely turned out that way. That's good. I'm out.
Well, I'm just trying to help you out here.
Like, you know, they didn't know he was gay when they killed him.
Yeah, he was acting.
No, they knew.
Oh, well, so this brings me to, do you involve a lot of the sex and violence in the story? Like when you say he was the first one killed, Do you go through the murders of someone like that, describe the slaughtering, or do you just pick up with the body?
In the beginning, it picks up with the body, but no, into the story, you're going to find exactly how he was killed, why he was killed. And to be honest with you, he wasn't killed for being gay. It's just, like I said, when the cicadas show up, everybody starts losing their mind because of how loud it is down in the valley. And so this guy that kills him, he just snaps. And what causes him to snap is his gay neighbor has probably over 100 wind chimes hanging around his front porch. And this guy lives right next door. And so he finds out some devastating news on that day. And then between the cicadas and the wind chimes, he snaps. And he had no intention of killing the guy in the beginning, but when he gets over there on his porch, he sees what the guy's actually doing on his porch because he lives a hedge. So the neighbor can only see about his head up. And when he gets on the porch, he catches the guy basically having sex, pleasuring himself, but he's speaking out loud, and the person he's speaking about is now standing over him. And he's a very religious straight man that is hearing this gay man laying there playing with himself, using his name of what he wants him to do to him, and oh, and daddy, and all this stuff, and that's when he just snaps and kills him. But it wasn't because of his sexuality. It just happened to be the fact he just lost his mind, and that was the final straw.
I feel like wind chimes and cicadas is a really bad combo. That could make anybody go a little crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I live near a swamp, and there's, like, peepers in the spring, these frogs, and they're so loud that I'm just like, I can't deal with it.
Oh, yeah. I'm from down in South Texas where we got bayous, and, yeah, we'd go camping down there, and at night the frogs could be crazy.
So what do you do, Jennifer? Is the husband still alive, or what happened?
Oh, the husband's still alive, yeah.
Is he tied up in the basement? Being beaten.
I mean, I can't legally talk about that. No, he's tied to his work computer because, I mean, someone has to pay the bills. Yeah. I'm glad he's probably not going to listen to this. Actually, he probably will, and he'd be like, really? You said somebody has to pay the bills?
So Edward, how long did it take you to put together this?
I started originally in 2013 is when I first wrote the book.
Wow.
As it was originally. And I did not get it published until January of 2020. And then when I got it back, I probably spent another 3 months. So altogether, if I sit down and say if I wrote continuously, it probably a good 2 years on the book.
So what's up next for you? Where are you going to go to now?
My next one I'm working on right now is called 70 Times 7. It's about a girl that had a horrible life. And her mother was a prostitute, drug addict, and this girl, that it affected her, and, you know, her life is total.
How dare you?
And right before she goes to prison, she ends up, in a sense, let's say, getting saved. Well, she wants to save her mother. You know, she wishes her mother wasn't in hell. And while she's in prison, her cellmate is a Catholic gal that tells her about purgatory. And that if you can get into purgatory, there's a secret pathway through hell called Torment Alley. And if you want to try and rescue somebody, get them out of hell, you have to go down Torment Alley to get to these people that you want. And so she and this gal make a pact to kill each other. That way you're not, in a sense, committing murder, but you are committing murder. So you're kind of like murdered, but you committed murder. And so it kind of, the scale is balanced, and that'll throw you into purgatory. She has to go through purgatory and through this alleyway, and periodically she has to relive parts of her past. And it's a bad past. The things that were done to this gal, I mean, even today we're probably throwing a parent under the jail cell. But when she experiences this stuff, if she has any kind of emotional reaction to it whatsoever, she has to start all the way back again at the beginning of the first gate with no memory whatsoever of what she's already experienced. So she has no clue how, if she got to the third gate, she'll have no clue if she made it to an eighth one. She just has no clue. Every time she starts over, it's like it's her first time there. And so basically hell is repetition. And so she just has to keep going and going. And whether she saves mama or not or whatever happens, that will have to be, you know, I can't let that cat out of the bag. That's one of my favorite things is these wild endings. I tend to leave them with of did they or didn't they?
Do you drink a lot or do you drive? Like, where do these ideas come from, do you
the
think?
The clowns, Alan. They come from the clowns.
Well, yeah, the clowns. Yeah, but that's what, do you hang out with? No, but so are the, let's see, are the characters who come to you first and then you put them in the situation? Or is it the story and then you put in characters?
Yeah, it's the idea, the story. There are times here I'll sit and me and my other half will bounce off ideas. And that's why I give him credit, because there's at least 3 or 4 books that he's helped me come up, oh, that'd make a great story. And so that's usually as I come up with the story first, and that's usually how I have the beginning and the end already figured out. And from then on, I just start writing. And if I feel, you know, I hear a character say, what about this one? Or her mother over here? Or, you know, don't forget about this guy right over there. And it just pops in my head. It literally does. These things just come in. Drinking now, I'm one of these people that I might have a drink now and then, like my birthday, New Year's Eve, you know, stuff like that. But I am, I'll say this, I live in a state where weed is legal. Hooray. And does that help? Yes.
I think it helps everybody. So the ideas come first. Like, so it'll pop in your head something kind of like high concept, like, oh, a girl walking through a secret passageway through hell. How long does it take you to actually develop the characters who are doing this, and how do you do that? Like, do you see them in your head? Do you describe how they physically look? Do you do homework, quote unquote, of like things that happened in their life that might never end up on the page, but you know it?
No, like I said, that just kind of comes in my head. The only thing I do when it comes to homework is like when I wrote Father May I with the computer or the quantum AI. My homework was it takes place in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And so my homework is I'm looking at what towns are around it. How do I want the character? This is the drama, so it's going to involve this point, this point, and this point. And so I'll do my research if I haven't been to that area of pictures and videos to give me an idea of what it looks like. So as I write my character, I want my reader and my character in my head that they're there. They look over and they see the rocky outcropping, the trees and the breeze. And it's like I'm really on the path with them. And so I'm just writing what they see. And then I try and do my thing is not to over explain, because sometimes that's just too much. Mm-hmm. But I also know if you don't give enough, then you're not connecting your reader either. You know, like, oh, he walked into a room and saw the dead body in the back. No, it's he got ready to walk in the room and a smell hit him. And as that smell hit him, he started having these emotions as they peeked in. And then the room's all like disheveled and what's he seeing and what's broke. And so, yeah, I'm one of those. I want you to actually feel as if you're looking through their eyes and feeling what they're feeling as you read it.
Well, you know, maybe you should take up drinking. Could you imagine what it would be like then?
Well, I could do like Stephen King did. He did the coke and doesn't remember writing Cujo.
Well, there you go. Cujo. Yeah. Anyway. So listen, you're set up on social media now. Do you have a website? Where can people find Ed?
All they have to do is Google EA Green / The Green Man. And all my websites, from Facebook to Instagram to TikTok to Slasher, all of my social media will actually pop up there. The links to my books pop up there. The last time I looked was last night, and there's like 20 or more options of where they can go to all these different sites. And I got a blog, which that's the first thing that pops up usually when you type in my name. And the blog is where I give my updates of what's happening and what's going on to everybody and heads up. But I do that on my other social media pages too. They're all out there. I think there's like 20 to pick from. All the pictures are there. If you hit images, it'll show you all the different photos that I do for my books and ideas. I have a YouTube channel that pops up. I make book trailers for all my books. And so you can find all the trailers there. And so, yeah, there's a lot that they can find on me. Like I said, just Google EA Green, The Green Man, and you'll have plenty to pick from.
Well, we'll have that up on our website. We'll put your website and out up there. And your grinder up there with pictures, too?
No, I had to get rid of that. Some guy decided to try to blackmail me, thinking the world didn't know I was gay.
Well, that's a book on itself.
I know, that's the book I want to...
Yeah.
We combine that with your clown collection, and I feel like...
Yeah.
That's a hit.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yes, it's called Send In the Clowns, to where they just show up in a town. Like, you know how the clowns were appearing all over the United States there for a while? Well, yeah. Kind of find out they got their own little circus and they like to come in and, you know, you always need more clowns. So they show up in a town. And...
Yeah, my mom collected clowns growing up. So I have a bit of a phobia.
Oh.
Mainly because I had to dust them so many times.
Yeah, you wouldn't like my clowns. They're not the nice clowns. They're all the evil clowns.
Oh, no, I have no problem with those. At least they're... Okay. They're being honest.
Yeah, the Shits, Giggles, and Wally and his Dolly. That's my three in the house right now.
Wow. There you go. John Wayne Gacy. In fishnets.
I just don't have an attic. Cellar.
Yeah, well, yeah, at least let you tell us. Yeah, sure. Anyway, the book is great. So now it's out, and people can pick it up now. Again, it's called The Blessed Flock. And it's part of his Cicada series, and it's book 1 to 4, and this is book 1. Edward Green, thank you for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ed.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.